Menu Mondays, right here with Chef Andre Blasingame. Andre is out for the day, and we've got a great stand-in for him, none other than Kenny Hendricks from Change Matters. This afternoon, we're going to talk to Minister Beverly Pegues Tucker and Dr. James Tucker about their mission to South Sudan. Get ready, folks. We've got a great show for you this afternoon. The telethon is coming up on Saturday, this coming Saturday, November 5th, Pacific time, 3 till 7 p.m. It is a 4-hour telethon, and we will be talking about this mission to South Sudan. We're raising money to take all kinds of essentials to Sudan. The money will be spent there in the Sudan to buy educational material, to help with their water filtration, to help in so many ways to get people on their feet. The war was over in 2020, and as you can imagine, they're struggling, they're doing the best they can. This is a humanitarian effort. I'm going to toss it over to Kenny Hendricks and Minister Beverly Tucker. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Busy trying to get ready for everything, but we're fine.
Good, good, good. So tell us about the South Sudan trip.
Okay. Well, first of all, just to give a little brief history about South Sudan. South Sudan was part of the Sudan. It was the largest country in Africa until South Sudan seceded from the northern part of Sudan, peacefully, by the way, on July 9th, 2011. So they have had their independence now for about 9 years. So that's a little bit of a background. But prior to that, some of you may know that the war between the north and the south of Sudan was outrageous. I mean, there were over 2 million people who were killed. People were scattered all over to various parts of Africa, primarily Uganda and Kenya. They probably had most of the refugees from the war that went there. The Lost Boys of South Sudan, some of you may have heard about them. A lot of them, they walked by foot from their village into Kenya. I mean, you're talking about meeting all kind of wild animals on their way. Some of the children were, some of the children were eaten by wild animals crossing rivers, the crocodiles, and it was just horrific. I mean, just horrific, the things that they have, that they went through as a people. It was really, I say it was an act of God that they were able to succeed from the north in 2011 without going back to war with the north. It was a peaceful transition, and thank God for that. It left South Sudan devastated. Not that South Sudan doesn't have resources, but the poverty and the fact that people don't know how to read and write, they missed out on, decades of having an opportunity to learn and to go to school and that type of thing. One of the things that the people there say, I was born in war. I was raised in war. I got married in war. I have children in war, and I'm still living in war. Can you imagine just that, a lifetime of dealing with that kind of, just the trauma of it?
No, it's hard to imagine.
It's hard.
And we complain in this country about the small things.
Right, exactly.
Everything. We've got it too easy. Just entirely too easy.
Right.
I'm going to toss it over to Kenny Hendricks because I know that he does have quite a few questions for you.
Okay.
And this is really a humanitarian effort. And I can only imagine what you're going through to get there and what it will be like when you get there. And be sure to tell us the dates. Let's talk more about the Sudan and what you're doing on this mission to South Sudan. Kenny
Hendricks? All right. Yes. Hi. Thanks. And I'm sorry I'm joining in a little bit late because I have some technical issues and I can't get upstairs to my office to actually get in there. We had our stairs redone. So at any rate, Beverly, how are you? It's good to talk to you.
Now, good to talk with you, Kenny. We're doing well. Thank
yeah.
you.
Good. I'm sorry again. I missed the first part. So I know you've talked about the trip to the South Sudan and the telethon. Why don't you give us a little bit of background on yourself and how long you've been involved with the WIN organization and what that's all about?
Okay. Well, actually, I was involved with the 1040 window is what we refer to in the ministry. It's 10 degrees. If you think about the globe, it's 10 degrees south and 40 degrees north of the equator. It spans the globe from West Africa, goes all the way over to Indonesia, drops down goes all the way over to Japan, drops down to include the country of Indonesia. There's 69 nations that are in that window. South Sudan is one of those nations. And I've been working for 30 years. August, it was my 30-year anniversary, and working in the part of the world that we refer to as the 1040 window. The reason we knew that it was important to start looking at the 1040 window, because we knew that in that region, when the researchers did the research, they knew that there were more wars taking place in that region. The poorest of the poor lived in that region. 2/3 of the world's population lives in that region. So today there's about 8 billion people on the earth. About 5 billion of those people live in just these 69 nations out of 220 some nations that are on the earth. You had not only poverty, but lawlessness, terrorism. A lot of the terrorism came out of that part of the world. Of course, we know right now we're dealing with terrorism ourselves here in the West. But the other thing that really disturbed me, because I teach on biblical principles and leadership and that type of thing, is to find out that the people couldn't read the Bible for themselves, you know, and they're listening, you know, to the preachers, and a lot of those preachers are illiterate. The people are illiterate. So they don't have the transforming message of the word of God for themselves as translated in the Bible, by the Bible. And so that was one of the things that really kind of got me interested in the fact that their literacy rate. It depends on what research you're looking at. They have them listed as number one or number two, being the number one or number two most illiterate nation in the world. And so those are the things about the 1040 window, specifically zeroing down to South Sudan. There's 11 to 12 million people living in South Sudan. And the reason I say 11 to 12 million, because even after they got their freedom from the North, they have been in civil war that started in December 2013, and they really finished. There's still scrimmages going on there, but technically the war has been over since about 2021. Depends on how you calculate that, what's going on in the nation. But the tribes are still fighting against one another in different parts of South Sudan. That answer your question?
Yes, it does. And I wanted to touch a bit you mentioned that they don't have access to the Bible. There was an issue with, and I'm not sure how sensitive this is, so if it's something you don't want to go into, that's fine. But the difference between the Muslim population and the Christian population, can you speak to how that has affected things in the country and the results of that?
Okay. Now, the South Sudan is considered a Christian country. It's the only real Christian country in the 1040 window nations. Now, the North is primarily Muslim. The South was primarily Christian. And so there were a lot of things that happened in the North when they succeeded from the North, the South succeeded from the North. All of the people who were South Sudanese, they were born in the South Sudanese region. they all had to leave immediately. I shouldn't say immediately. I don't know exactly how much time, but they all had to leave wherever they were in Sudan to come back and populate South Sudan. And so they used to get their churches burnt down. I remember a pastor calling me one night. They were celebrating the fact that they finally were able to build this one church. And they went over there, I think it was around Christmas time, actually. And they went there to celebrate. But when they got there, they found out that the church was on fire. It was being burnt down. So there used to be a lot of persecution. And the northern, when Sudan was one country, it was among the top 10. Either they ran between the top, North Korea is usually number one, but between two and three of the top persecuted nations in the world. So, so they've been through a lot. They've been through a lot. And some of the Christians who were born in the North were able to stay in the North, but there are issues that are happening. The government, I don't know if you know, but there was a government military coup not too long ago, a year or so ago, and they said that they were going to let all citizens in the North be equal and so on and so forth. So they were trying to do some reconciliation, but some hiccups happened here and there. But to get back to South Sudan is actually, to my surprise, is primarily Catholic. And there's a large Catholic.
Oh, really? Presence. Catholic. Okay.
Catholic. Yeah. And there's a large Catholic presence there in South Sudan. The only state that I've been in South Sudan has really been Juba, the capital city. And there really is a lot of work to do there. And we need to help these people. If we can help them, you know, there's this old song, you know, if I can help somebody, my living will not be in vain. There's a lot of help that they need there. Education for the African-American community, Africans coming out of slavery. The number one thing for our ancestors was what? Education.
Because education.
And they knew that education could change things for people. And so that's one of the reasons why we've started these learning centers over in South Sudan, in Juba primarily. We started in 2014. In October 2014 is when we started the learning centers.
Oh, outstanding. Now, I want to speak for a minute. I guess a lot of people are still accustomed to saying the Sudan or Sudan, and a lot of people sometimes forget to say South Sudan. Can you speak to how important that is that we specify South Sudan? I kind of equated, you mentioned North Korea. We don't talk about Korea. We talk about North Korea and South Korea because they're very, very different in terms of politics and things like that. Can you speak to a minute about the importance of ensuring that we understand what South Sudan is as opposed to the Sudan?
All right. James wants to just make a comment on something that I just said.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
You have to excuse me, but I'll address the issue of there's a humanitarian crisis in South Sudan at this time. And there's between 7.8 million people in need of assistance. And I say that because food insecurity is a problem. And as a result of that, there's a need to address the issue about the women and children in the area. Malnutrition is a problem. And they have one of the worst food insecurity emergencies in the world today. And that's why it's important for not only citizens of the United States, but globally to take a look at how we can help the people in South Sudan. And as my wife mentioned earlier, the issue of learning how to read and write is so important and critical because they have one of the lowest illiteracy rates in the world. And people say, why are we going to South Sudan? Why aren't we working with the Black people in the United States of America? Well, the truth is, they are worse off. They have the lowest illiteracy rate in the world, and they're facing some of the same issues we're facing here. And we must think outside the box and start thinking about helping people that are in desperate need of assistance globally. And South Sudan is one of the countries that really need our assistance.
If I may ask a question.
Sure.
Okay, hi. This is Kiana Williams. I'm the showrunner and producer for ITRN. And thank you so much, Beverly, for allowing me to just pose a quick question. Regarding literacy, how is that being defined? I'm sure they speak their own languages. Now, is literacy basically defined as the ability to speak English? Or is that how they're determined to be illiterate because they're not speaking and writing English? Because
excellent question. Well, they cannot, their mother tongue is actually Arabic, but they cannot read, write, or speak Arabic either. The reason we're teaching English is that once they became a free nation, they changed their national language to English, which meant that anyone who could not speak English, read, write, or speak English.
You've become muted.
Jobs there. So that's the reason. But no, they do not. I mean, they're illiterate. I mean, literally, they cannot read any language. Let me put it that way.
Was there a language did they have a language prior to Arabic?
Well, they do have tribal, most of the countries, they may have a national language, mm-hmm. but then they have a tribal language. Yes, they had a tribal language, but they are illiterate. When I say illiterate, they cannot read any language. Not only not their tribal language, they cannot read.
Nothing, huh?
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's a very good question.
And Dr. Tucker mentioned the famine and lack of food and things like that. Can you talk to us about what the funds that we are trying to raise for the telethon? What are the types of things that you can do? For example, how far does a dollar go in South Sudan as opposed to, for example, here? So how much can you get done with the money you're trying to raise?
Well, the inflation is outrageous there as well. But what we're doing, our goal is to raise $66,000 for this particular mission. And then we're looking into the future years 2 and 3 as well. But what we can do with like the $66,000, we can, first of all, we want to take water filters there because they deal with a lot of typhoid there simply because they drink the water out of the Nile. They bathe in the Nile. They water their, animals in the Nile. And they bathe, they bathe there, they drink there, and everybody else bathes and drinks there, mm-hmm. All the different animals and things like that. So the water filtering system is a fairly, we've taken over several different types, but we have found one that we really feel like it's the best one to take, that they can filter their water that they're drinking before they drink it. So they aren't drinking muddy water, they're being able to filter their water. Which is huge, by the way. And mm-hmm. yeah. So did that answer your question about the water?
Yeah, yes, it does. And when you're talking about water filters, I guess the first thing that comes to my mind is something like a Brita water filter or something like that. But are you talking about a massive sort of device? Yeah, or are you really talking about like things like the Brita water filter?
Well, we're taking a water filter. I'm sorry, I don't have a picture of it, and I'll try to have a picture for our telethon. But it's a water filter. It's not like a filter that we would use to filter our water with. The pitcher with the nice little filter in it.
Right.
All that.
Yeah.
Water is more than cloudy. It's dirty water. So this is an mm-hmm. actual filter. It has charcoal in it or whatever that they can actually put through this apparatus that their water will come out clean. So it's not like, the water is dirty water. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, go ahead.
No, so it's an entire filtration system, so to speak.
No, it's just individual. What we had to do because those, if a filtration system is very expensive, and also to be mm-hmm. able to get it there, and then if you had to send it by a container, it'd take 3 months. It might cost you $25,000 just to try to ship.
Yeah, right.
So what we use is individual filters that we give to the students and to the teachers, and the students aren't the same students. I mean, we continue to get students who come and go and they graduate and so on and so forth. But we give them their own personal water filter that they can use. At first, it was just at the learning centers, and they would come there and they would filter their water there. But we're trying to expand that so that we can have water filters. You know, I don't know if we're going to have money for 900 of those water filters, but a significant number of water filters for the students and teachers.
And this is the
type.
Just really quickly, just so I have a clear picture, perhaps this matches what's in my mind. I'm thinking of the types of water filters that you take camping with you. If you're coming across natural bodies of water that probably have a lot of sediment, different things from the environment around and from wherever the water is being funneled from, you would need a handheld sort of apparatus that kind of takes the function of a straw maybe, but it has a multi-layered filtration system inside of it, charcoal being one of the primary filtering substances. Is that a bit more accurate? So do they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe it's a better picture. Yes.
I got it.
And you know, they're small and portable. You can just, you know, that's the whole deal is that they're easy to manage, and we will be able to take them among all of us. Each one of us will be taking suitcase loads of different things as we go. So.
And are you getting any support from any other governments, whether it be on the continent or here or anywhere, or is it just kind of a grassroots thing struggling?
Yeah, it's purely grassroots. And honestly, for me, it's entanglement. If you get into a lot of things with the government and you go through hoops and that kind of thing. We're just, you know, ordinary people who want to do something good for somebody. And that,
well, I would call you extraordinary people, not ordinary people. To do this is extraordinary. So
very ordinary, but yeah, that, you know, it's a grassroots effort. And you know how it is with grassroots efforts. You know, you do the best you can with what you have, you know. But we do need help. We're reaching out. This will be doing the telethon, by the way, will be the first time that we've had this large of an outreach. You know, we've tried to raise money in, you know, various ways before. But we're hoping that we're going to be able to touch the hearts of people, the listeners, and they will help us to be able to not only start what we're doing now, but hopefully they'll work with us as well in the future. And hopefully one day they will even take a trip with us to South Sudan so they can see, you know, how their work and the things that they've done or their financial gifts has made a difference in other people's lives.
And I wanted to remind the listeners, and you know, this turns into a podcast. So today is Monday, October 31st. 2022, and the telethon is this coming Saturday, November 5th, 2022. And can you give those times again, Beverly?
Yes, the times, let's see, it's it starts at 3, from 3 to 7 specific time, mountain time. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I thought you said something. I'm sorry. Mountain time, the time will be 4 until 8 o'clock in the afternoon. Central time is from 5 to 9. Eastern time is from 6 to 10. There is 4 hours. Go ahead.
Yeah, and folks can get there on the regular Zoom call. If you're accustomed to coming into Intentional Talk Radio Network via Zoom, you can do that, or you can watch it on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and search on Intentional Talk Radio Network, South Sudan Telethon, or even just Intentional Talk Radio Network, and you should be able to come up with that. I do want to circle back. I just want to make sure that people have that information, but I do want to circle back to South Sudan, the naming of South Sudan, and that how important it is that we recognize South Sudan as a separate entity and an individual nation at this point.
Okay. Yes, it is. It's a sovereign nation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. We need, hold on just a minute, Kenny. We need to plug in. Okay. Yeah. they are they're their own nation. They have their own government. Part of some of the issues that have happened there is that, you know, the government, they're still very tribal. And so, you know, it's whether, you know, who's getting, you know, some of the funds, if everybody's not getting it, you know, it's a lot of political things that are going on. But, yeah, there we go.
Are they still the newest country in the world?
Yes, they still are the newest country in the world. Yes, they are.
And that's pretty amazing. We don't typically think of new countries these days. You know, we think of the world is set a certain way, and having a new country is a little bit foreign to most people. And to say this is the newest country is a little bit, I guess, strange and hard to sort of wrap your mind around that this, as a separate nation, has not been around for, what did you say, 2013?
Yeah, 2011, actually.
Okay, yeah. 2011. Okay. And they're still going through the... say it again?
July 9th, 2011.
July 9th, 2011.
And, you know, I've been to the northern part of Sudan. I had been there 3 times, but as a foreigner, I could not, they would not allow me to go to the south. So as soon as the south was open, they got their freedom by January. I was there. 5-6 months later, I was in the country in South Sudan. James wants to say something. Excuse me.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, Kenny, as you know, you mentioned earlier about South Sudan is the youngest country in the world. But the sad part is that in recent years, the problem has been, the shock of COVID. I mean, COVID had a great impact on
South Sudan.
And also the climate, they had a climate shock. For an example, they've had floods, dry spells, and droughts. And of course, as a result of that, it has created a humanitarian crisis where there is a limited amount of food. And of course, the price of food has gone up. You say, why is it going up? It's going up because of the Russian blockade, because a lot of countries depend on Ukraine for food in that area, and they're not able to get the food. So as a result of that, the people are really suffering. We are only going to have a impact on a small percentage of the people in South Sudan, but as you know, we can help one person or a few people. We have done our job as Christians,
and you have to start somewhere, and you have to help where you can. You know, it's not easy to help, you know, millions or even thousands of people. So whatever you can do, I'm sure will help people. And if you can teach, what is the word? Teach one, reach one, teach one, and. Right. You know, the more you can teach, and then they can teach another person, and they can teach two more people, and it can begin to grow exponentially if you continue to do the work. Talk to us a little bit about the types of education that you provide for the people and how that's received.
Okay,
I was there just before the pandemic, and you wouldn't believe the conditions are. They don't have the modern technology like we have here. They some of the classes are held outside. Number one, number two, they have under the tree. They have blackboards. Yes, where you have chalk and things like that. And the people are very anxious and excited just to be in school. I mean, unlike many of our children in the United States of America, you know, it's a privilege, but they'll do anything to learn to read and write, and also to connect with people that want to help them.
Yeah, they love learning. I mean, that's just all there is to it. And they feel so privileged. And the other thing, Kenny, that was really interesting was that when we started these schools, people have to also pay to go to government schools, just like they do to go to private schools. So we're kind of bouncing around, but we're trying to get the plug in here so we won't run out of juice. That was why we started the schools, because we noticed one of our trips over there that there were so many kids. We said, why aren't the kids in school? Well, their parents can't afford for them to be able to go to school. Well, they have to have uniforms and things like that as well. Mm-hmm. So that's why we kind of started. That's why we started, so the kids would be able to go to school. But there were just as many of the children's parents who start coming to school with them, even their grandparents. that would come to these schools because they never had the opportunity to go to school and to learn. I don't know. That just really, we have one video which we will be showing about this man. He was 50 years old. He said he thought that he would be making an X for his name forever, the rest of his life, because he never thought he would have an opportunity to be able to learn to read. And so, but let me tell you something. In those classes, if those kids, the teacher doesn't have to worry about keeping the kids in order, because those older people, whether they're relatives or not, they'll give them a little whack, or they give them that eye and they know that they better sit there and learn, because they're saying to them, this is an opportunity that we didn't have, but you're having, you're able to be blessed to be able to do this. So, yeah.
That's outstanding. Yeah, kind of get popped like we used to get popped when we were kids started acting up.
Yeah,
we could use a little more of that in this country as well. And you think right. about the fact that we do take a lot of the things that we have for granted. We are extremely privileged. There's a lot. This country has a lot of problems, and you know, all over the world there's problems. Mm-hmm. No matter where you go, I mean, there's no utopia. But comparatively speaking, we are, you know, it sounds like we're light years away from where they are, and it's very commendable and inspiring that you guys are doing such good work out there. And I hope that, you know, we get a lot of response on the telethon and getting this word out about what's going on over there and letting people know that, you know, you can make a difference. A little bit can make a big difference to the folks over there. So I really want to stress that to people that if you're listening, that anything that you can do, any sort of donation will really help this cause. And why don't you give some information, I don't know if you did it before I came on, some information about the dates of the trip and that information.
Okay, the dates of the trip, it will be, hi, Yolanda.
Hi.
The dates of the trip will be December 1st through December the 8th. Or with the reason we had to change the dates because the pastor that got malaria again. This is his third time this year getting malaria. Yeah, right. I mean, something that like that we just take for granted. But hopefully next year, Yolanda and Kiana and Pat. Now, Kenny, they might keep you. You know, we can do that trip so you don't have, maybe you'll have somebody else that can fill in for you. But just to be able to go and to see for yourself, you know, seeing people learn under a tree and they're happy to be in class. I mean, they make their, we give them money for, chalkboard paint. They make their own chalkboards because it's half the price of trying to buy the chalkboards there. I mean, and oh my God, when they get up to read. Pardon?
Wow.
Yeah. When they get up to read or to write on the chalkboard, I mean, it is an accomplishment for them. And you can't even believe how, what would you say, Jane? Just how happy they are, how privileged they feel, you know?
Of course. And the things that we take for granted.
Right. Exactly.
That we take for granted. And the interesting thing is my prayer, and I have to say it this way, my prayer is that the telethon is a resounding success, that we raise $150,000 to make sure that the people of the Sudan are well cared for. And people of South Sudan are well cared for.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is running towards the Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is running to Ukraine to assist the people in the Ukraine. And the people in the Ukraine have said to this people in this country, we don't need you over here. We only need your weapons. But people are running to Ukraine to assist them, assisting people who are the Afghans. We don't assist in the same way people on the continent of Africa.
It's true.
We don't assist the Haitians in the same way. This is nothing more than not only it's an imbalance, it's an atrocity. It's an atrocity. And in some ways, we can say that, you know what? It's just like a subliminal genocide. Okay? Because it's okay that people don't have the essentials. They don't have the necessary things to live on. And we've got to get out of that mindset. The people on the continent of Europe, they're not the only people that need assistance. So we have to do what's necessary to assist the people in South Sudan.
That's true. And I think a lot of people, I think it's because people, I don't know, maybe I'm naive, which my husband says I am. They don't know. You know what I mean? I just think that if people know, you know, what they can do to be able to assist. You know, I was at this conference and this very rich man was there. And you couldn't tell he was rich by the way he was dressed. You know, his shoes were worn and everything. And so I was quite surprised. But at any rate, he told the story. Pardon?
He was rich. Worn.
Yeah, he was rich. He was rich.
Yeah, drove a car that was 25 years old. Yeah.
Rich. Yeah, right. Yeah, right. But he tells his kids, he had like 8 or 9 children. So he takes his kids to McDonald's. And of course, he tells them anything you want on the menu, you can get. And so they just rack it up everything they want. So he writes everything down and just, you know, under each kid what they want and everything. But then he says, now, what do you really need to eat? And what on your menu that you will take the money and, oops.
There's an echo.
Yeah.
Did we lose you, Beverly?
I don't know why we're echoing.
There's two devices that are right next to each other.
Two devices are open.
They're in close proximity to one another, so we're getting a feedback loop. So one of them needs to be perhaps on the other side of the room-ish.
Or muted.
Or muted. But also, if both of them will be unmuted, then they need to be further apart.
I realize that, but I just needed to have time to turn it off. Okay.
No problem.
Okay. Yeah, my phone was getting ready to go out.
Gotcha.
Can you all see me?
Yes.
Okay, because I can't see myself. So, at any rate.
That's okay. It's very dark, but that's okay.
Yeah, I know. The light. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay. Okay, well, I forgot what I was saying, so please remind me.
So, you were saying that someone...
Yeah, the story, yeah. Anyway, if I said this person's name, you would know who. You may know whose company it was for sure. So he makes a list of everything the children want. The children, I mean, their list is long. So he said, now look at your list and see what you can eat or you want. But what you decide not to eat, we can put this into your missions account to be able to help somebody else.
Wow. Great. And when you say, when Dr. Tucker said.
And I thought, wow, you know, how there, you know, wow. Yeah. So that trip, they were able to put $100 from all of them into their missions account. So just those kinds of things, little things that we can do that can make a difference for somebody else. Yeah.
And I used to give books to South Africa when a friend of mine who was a coordinator at Crenshaw High School, every year for about 10 years or more, she would take a contingency of students to Africa. And at that time, they were building a library near the college because the African students on that college campus were not allowed to use the library. So I sent 250, almost 300 books. Mm-hmm. And I went to the airport, took all these boxes. That was at a time when you could do that. You took all these boxes and they shipped the boxes with them. And they did that repeatedly for a few years. And the group that she took, it wasn't a large group of kids, but it was enough. It was enough, and they built that library. And the library is still standing today.
Wow, that's awesome.
And I mentioned to you Gregory Johnson, who is on a trip next month also. He's going in December. And he will be there a month and a half. And their trip, based on what they say, theirs is trade as opposed to aid. Mm-hmm. I think it's very close, the same thing, because what we get by your trip, I wouldn't call it simply the feeling of gratitude, but absolutely the feeling of gratitude. They have very little to trade right now, but given the opportunity and building, they will be in a position to trade. They will be in a better position. The war just ended, and it's not like they don't have anything, but this is about offering aid so that the opportunity to trade will be sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think that's great. They're in that position to be able to do that. It's wonderful. But the people in South Sudan aren't quite there yet.
Yes.
So, but it would be good to be able to, you know, maybe do some collaboration or something later. We really need to get the people educated. They need to be able to eat. We have also done an agricultural project there where we got seeds, and we got the seeds from Uganda to make sure the seeds were, I don't know.
Uh-oh.
She froze. We'll just give her a minute.
Oh, that they would grow in that terrain right to the north. It was nine of us. There were seven African Americans and there were two white people. And we were having a women's leadership conference. Okay. So the women who were leaders there doing different type of ministry things. When the women, when they saw us, they started crying. I mean, they were crying so hard.
Oh,
it was unbelievable. I didn't know what they were crying about. And I said, you know, well, what? Is it because I didn't understand Arabic, you know, and I during slavery.
Wow.
They thought, so they were like, you know, we thought you all died when you crossed the Atlantic. And I don't know, of course, we broke down then too. But then they want to know, why did you come back and see about us?
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
So Beverly, what happens now with North Sudan? What happens with North Sudan? Is there any connection between North and South Sudan?
They do. I imagine it's a long story, but yes. Yeah, it would take me a little bit.
Okay, so will the aid that your trip is about, will that float over to the north? Will that also help the people on the north?
Float over to what? Well, the north, this has nothing to do with the north. Listen, Khartoum is so incredibly developed, you would think that you were in New York or somewhere like that.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And they are very rich. They took a lot of the money, a lot of the resources, a lot of the oil. They had a pipeline that they were pumping the oil out of the south to the north. And they are very rich compared to the south that has roads, that has potholes. And they are, you know, they have a couple roads that are paved. You know, there's no comparison.
Is that right?
Yeah, no comparison.
But Colette, considering the population in South Sudan, what we're doing is just like a drop in the bucket because the population's so huge.
Yeah.
And like I said earlier, we can help just a few along the way. We have done our job. So it's important to understand that what we're doing is only going to impact a small percentage, or maybe half percentage of the people that we're actually working with because of the huge population. The country is so huge.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And how many people are in South Sudan.
Like I said, you know, because of the war, the civil war that they recently came out of, it's between 11 to 12 million. Nobody knows. They don't know. They don't have an actual count of how many people didn't know who were killed, because they still have scrimmages in other parts of the world, of the country.
Right, right. Okay,
now,
Keon,
when you go over, when you go over, how was your safety with regard to those scrimmages and things like that happening?
Well, there was, I've been in the North 3 times. I've been in the South 8 times. Okay. There was only really, maybe there was one other incident, but it was a light incident. But the incident that they called us to the U.S. Embassy was about was because there were some issues at one of their markets, where the soldiers who hadn't been paid, some for 3 months, some for 6 months, and they just start taking things because they needed to feed their families. And so it's relatively safe. They don't, I just met yesterday with James and I just met yesterday with a couple. They're Nigerian, but they work in South Sudan. And they actually got called to South Sudan in 2013, March of 2013, when we had a leadership conference there. The Lord spoke to this man, who's an amazing person, and called him to South Sudan. So they live there. I say that to say that, you know, there are other foreigners that live there. Now, when they called us to that day, when I told you about the incident in the market, they were telling people to leave. They were telling NGOs and that kind of thing. But we were leaving the next day, so we were out of there anyhow. But even then, we didn't feel unsafe at all. They just, you could not be a foreigner, you know, and not looking. Like, they thought James and I were white, for example. So would not be, yeah, could
really?
You imagine? I was so insulted, I didn't know what to do.
They thought you were white?
They thought we were white. And my white friend who was with me, she knew that I didn't, you know, but yeah, they thought we were white. So most African Americans would have been able to just, you know, continue on as usual. But and then we have to be careful because one of the person who really is co-leading this event with me, or helping me, my number one assistant is Dr. Martha Cooper. And so it would not be safe for her. We take special precautions just to make sure that, you know, she's taken care of. She doesn't feel threatened or anything. I mean, she knows.
Going on this one?
Oh, yes. She's going. Oh, okay. Yeah. This will be, it'll be my 9th trip. It'll be her 8th trip. So she's been there 7 times. I've been there 8 times already. But,
okay.
Yeah.
Kiana has a question.
I do. My question is regarding land and the ability for them to grow food. You mentioned seeds earlier, and and this is a question that often runs in my mind, and I've learned a little bit about it. But when it comes to people who are living in war-torn areas around the world, I often wonder what happens to the land underneath their feet such that they can no longer have food. And I understand that certain parts of any land anywhere can grow certain things. So I think really what I do wonder is, when I understand that war happens and I understand there's so much devastation, but also in terms of the availability of food, those who eat meat as well as vegetation, does that just go away entirely? Is the vegetation leveled within a certain unwalkable distance? What happens? Because it is the land underneath our feet that provides most of the food for both us and animals. So I start to ask those questions. I understand that in some places in the world, governments have made it illegal for indigenous people to use their land or to even consume the food that they grow for these nations. So I think I just really have a question about, are they How does that happen such that they're not allowed to use the land under their feet?
I addressed that earlier, you know, in terms of what has been a climatic shock in, in South Sudan. And as a result of that, you know, the people are suffering from floods. There's been dry spells. There's been droughts. So therefore, it has been difficult for them to grow foods in certain parts of South Sudan.
And none of that over this, none of that has been replenished. None of that. It's still unusable land at this point. Or is that recent floods?
What'd you say about the floods?
Are those recent?
Yes,
recent floods.
Yeah. It's impacting them as we speak at this moment.
Right. They have flooding like this every year.
Oh, I see.
But they don't have the infrastructure to be able to handle the flooding. You know, that's part of the issue, number one. The other part of the issue, first of all, they are in proximity of the Nile. I mean, the richest soil, that soil is blacker than the Quran black. Okay. And, but the other, they don't have money for seeds. So they don't even have, so they can't even harvest seeds from the other crops that they've had and things like that. So it's very complex. It really is. But, I hear you because I'm like, you have longer growing seasons than anybody in the world, but you have to have the seeds in order to get to be able to grow. And that's one of the reasons why we start bringing seeds as well. But you have to get this. What kind of seeds are those, James?
And where will the seeds come from and what are they growing?
Well, they grow corn. They grow everything. I mean, they can grow corn, beans, what else?
Various
grains and things like that. But we buy the seeds from Uganda because it's similar soil, it's cultivation and all that.
So are they bringing things like lettuce and tomatoes? Are you able to grow that?
I didn't see any lettuce there, but lots of tomatoes there. Lots of tomatoes.
Okay, watermelon, antelope.
Right, yeah, different types of fruits and things like that can be grown on the vine. Yeah.
Okay. So growing...
Yeah, the growing season, I don't know, what do they have? I forget, but they have a very long growing season before the monsoons and the floods and everything come. But it's the infrastructure, you see.
Sure.
You know, if they can harvest that water for the drought, you know?
Yeah. And I'd like to learn a little bit more about the history of the land prior to the wars and the destruction, because that would, I think, I'm sure they know, obviously they know, but I'm curious for myself because that would kind of give people, it would give me a better understanding of, maybe how I can help them in a way, because I mean, seeds come from something that grew. So, you know, that we live on a very cyclical planet, and I'm very curious about that. I'll just leave it there.
And we are at the top of the hour, so this has been great. So, either Colette or Beverly, you guys want to give the details to the listeners on the telephone so that people will know what's going on before we sign off?
Let's go ahead and do that. And the telethon, again, is this coming Saturday, November 5th. November 5th, right here at ITRN Radio from 3 p.m. until 7 p.m. This is a four-hour telethon. This is a humanitarian educational telethon, and this is to aid the people in South Sudan. Beverly?
Thank you. We're going to take food. We're going to take water filters. We may take some medicine. We're trying to check out, see if we can find some malaria medicine also to take. We are going to take materials to so that people can learn. Once you learn, it cannot be taken away from you. And as my husband is saying in the background, we are helping the poorest of the poorest people in the world.
Yes.
We can do this together.
Yes. So thank you very much. Again, it's been great. Got kind of in there. But thank you so much, Dr. James Tucker and Beverly Pegues Tucker. Again, the telethon is this coming Saturday right here at ITRNradio.com. Be sure to join us. It's going to be great. Have a good afternoon. Thank you, Beverly. We'll talk with you
soon. All right. Thank you. Appreciate you all so much.